The following is a seminar entitled Pure Devotional Service, Part 1, given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on April 17th, 2015, in Pune, India.
So, I'm very, very delighted to be back here with all of you wonderful devotees here in NVCC Pune. I was asked to do a series of lectures on pure devotional service, and I became very excited with that, the whole prospect of doing that, because isn't that what it's all about? It's not the buildings, it's really about our bhakti, how much we can develop bhakti within our hearts. Really, that's what it really matters at the time of death. If you can have pure bhakti, you're going to be in bliss. If you don't have pure bhakti, you're not going to be in bliss. So the most important thing we can do is cultivate pure bhakti. Otherwise, we're not doing it right. We're doing something wrong if we're not cultivating pure devotional service. So Prabhupada has given a very nice chapter, actually, on page 4 of the Nectar of Devotion. So we're actually going to base our series of lectures on the characteristics of pure devotional service. So today's lecture will be discussing the first characteristic, which is pure devotional service brings immediate relief from all kinds of material distress. Why is that important to us? Well, do any of you have any distress? Anybody ever have any kind of distress? Sure. We're being bombarded with all kinds of distresses at every minute. Adiatmic, adibhotic, and adidaivic distress. Distresses of the body and the mind, I may become sick. Distress is caused by other living entities. My boss is laying me off from my job today. Distresses by adidaivic, distresses from natural disasters. Like in Vrindavan, we had this incredible hailstorm and the Balaram Hall was completely, the roof was completely destroyed. The Balaram Hall is being rebuilt because it's huge hailstones came down, like an avalanche of huge hailstones. So that's called adidaivic miseries. So in this world, we're being tortured and tormented by so many miseries. But pure devotional service brings immediate relief from all kinds of material distress. That word immediate is pretty nice, isn't it? Immediately. So we don't have to wait. All we have to do is learn how to enter into the mood of pure devotional service, and then immediately we get relief, instant relief. So Prabhupada has given a very lengthy description. The class time would not allow this particular section, as many pages. So we'll start reading from it a little bit and discuss as we go along. This is how Prabhupada originally gave a lecture on the Nectar of Devotion in Vrindavan, a series of lectures. He would have Prajumna read a little bit, and Prabhupada would speak, and then he'd have Prajumna read a little bit, and this way he gave. So in the same way, I'll read a little bit and talk about it, and read a little bit and talk about it. In the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that one should surrender unto Him, giving up all other engagements. The Lord also gives His word there that He will protect surrendered souls from the reactions of all sinful activities. Srila Rupa Goswami says that the distresses from sinful activities are due both to the sins themselves and to sins committed in our past lives. Generally, one commits sinful activities due to ignorance. But ignorance is no excuse for evading the reaction, sinful activities. Sinful activities are of two kinds, those which are mature and those which are not mature. The sinful activities through which we are suffering at the present moment are called mature. The many sinful reactions or activities stored within us for which we have not yet suffered are called immature. For example, a man may have committed criminal acts but not yet been arrested for them. Now, as soon as he is detected, arrest is awaiting him. Similarly, for some of our sinful activities, we are waiting distresses in the future, and for others which are mature, we are suffering at the present moment. So that's pretty problematic, isn't it? We have the mature sinful activities that we're suffering from right now, and we have the immature ones which are suffering, which we're due to suffer from 5 minutes from now, an hour from now, tomorrow, next week. There's a huge stock of sinful reactions just waiting to unfold upon you from millions and billions of lifetimes of sinful activities. Do you know how long you've been in this material world? We can't calculate it. It's incalculable. And many of those births were as human beings in which we were committing sinful activities. And so we have a huge stock of karma waiting to hit us, you see. But the beauty of Krishna consciousness is you get relief from both the reactions to mature and immature sinful activities. Whatever distresses you're suffering from right now, those become mitigated as you transcend the plane of the material distresses, you see. In other words, it works in two ways. One is the reactions don't actually come because Krishna says, moksha sarvapapebo moksha shami. I deliver you from the sinful reactions. On the one hand, Krishna says, okay, he's not going to get that reaction because he's my devotee. You see. Or it may come as a token reaction. Actually, it was from some sinful activity you committed, you were due to die today in a traffic accident. But instead, it was a little, you just bruised your elbow a little bit. You see. You got a token reaction. So that's one way that Krishna consciousness benefits you. Is the reaction is taken away or just given as a token reaction. Another way is because there are reactions coming. We are experiencing suffering conditions. Another way is you actually transcend it. You realize, hey, it's not me. I'm not getting old. I'm not getting sick. I don't need a pair of glasses or a hearing aid. This is just the material body. It's not really me. You see? I'm an eternal spiritual being, qualitatively one of the Lord and one of His eternal associates. I have nothing to do with this place. It's more or less a dream state. Of course, it's real, but it's not the ultimate reality. It's a temporary reality, is it? So the reactions become removed, minimized, or transcended. Three things. You transcend them. If I think that I'm this body, then the stresses are very, very intolerable. But if I realize I'm not the body, and this is and I'm burning off the reactions for previous sinful activities, this is part of my purification. The suffering I'm going through is part of my purification. It's actually Krishna's mercy. Whatever suffering I'm going through is the mercy of Krishna to purify me from my previous sins, to bring me closer and closer to that moment when I actually totally revive my pure love of God, you see. So in this way, either removed, minimized, or transcended, this devotional service process, bhakti yoga, Krishna consciousness, is all auspicious because it takes you out of the suffering. Next paragraph. There are many results of past sinful activities for which we are suffering at the present moment, and we may be suffering in the future due to our present sinful activities. It's like you are breathing. Do you realize you're sinning just by breathing? You're killing so many microbial germs. You're a mass murderer. And were it not for being engaged in Krishna consciousness, you have to pay the karmic price for killing all of those microbial germs. You have to become a microbial germ and be inhaled. You see? So that's another beauty of Krishna consciousness. Even though while driving down the street, some insect may come into the radiator of your car, you may smash an insect on your windshield. So many things are unavoidable. But just as an ambulance driver can run a red light without getting arrested, you see, because he has an emergency, he's taking a patient to the hospital, so he can go through the red light and the police won't give him a ticket, you see. So by engaging in devotional service, you're engaged in activity which frees you. If you're sincerely engaged in devotional service, you are engaged in an activity which frees you from suffering reactions from the unavoidable sins that we commit in our day-to-day lives. So that's another reason, you see. Engaging in devotional service then will liberate you from... You're not committing any more karma. You're burning off your previous karma and you're not creating any new karma. Those who even engage in pious activities, they are still creating karma. Pious people, you see. They're still creating karma. Krishna bhakti rasa bhavita amati kriyatam yadi kato palabhyate tattala yang vabhimuyam ekalam janmakoti sukritayana labhyate. Pure devotional service in Krishna consciousness, Krishna bhakti rasa bhavita. You see. Even by engaging in pious activities for hundreds and millions of lives, you see, one cannot come to the transcendental platform. Only by engaging in Krishna consciousness, devotional service, by being very greedy, you see, the word greed is used, lalyam is the Sanskrit word for greed. One should be very greedy for pure bhakti. I hope you can gain some greed from pure bhakti from this seminar series, that I must become very greedy for pure devotional service. Because it's only that greed which can liberate you from this material existence, to become very greedy for bhakti. Just like in this world, some man is very greedy to have sex, or very greedy to make money, or very greedy to get some big position as prime minister, or this or that. You see, this is greed. So you can, to become a powerful business magnate, you see. This is greed. But you can take that same tendency for greed and you can apply it to Krishna bhakti. I must become very, very greedy for Krishna bhakti. That will deliver you, you see. Not by pious activities, even for hundreds and millions of lifetimes. So just become very greedy for Krishna bhakti. Continuing. But all of these reactions and sinful deeds can immediately, isn't that a wonderful word, immediately be stopped. Just like the title, now it's coming up in the purport itself, can immediately be stopped. You can get instant relief from the sufferings of material existence simply by becoming serious about Krishna consciousness. Immediately. That now I am the Jivara Sarupahoy, Krishnara Nityadas. Now I know who I am. I am the eternal servant of Krishna. I'm not this body. I'm not Mr. Such and Such or Mrs. Such and Such here in this material world. These are simply external designations of the body. Upadis, they are called. Body upadi. False designations. One has to kick out all these false designations and simply assert that I am the eternal servant of Krishna. And I have no business, no duty, no obligation to anyone except for Krishna. That's it. Period. Finished. Bas. Simply, I must fully dedicate myself to Krishna. Is it? As evidence for this, Rupa Goswami quotes from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Now I can give some. Prabhupada explained in that most wonderful lectures, I was just hearing them on the way down to Pune, getting ready, getting revved up for this seminar series. Prabhupada explains that by studying this, you're directly associating with Rupa Goswami. This is Rupa Goswami's teachings, you see. Prabhupada is presenting the teachings of Rupa Goswami. So we are presenting the teachings of Rupa Goswami this morning. This is his, what he learned from Lord Chaitanya. Actually, Lord Chaitanya's teachings taught by Rupa Goswami actually become sweeter each time it's spoken. Just like the mango, when it's touched by the beak of the parrot, it becomes sweeter. So it was very sweet, spoken by Lord Chaitanya, became sweeter still, spoken by Srila Rupa Goswami, and sweeter still, spoken by Prabhupada. Of course, when I speak it, it becomes like bitter poison, but I'm trying to do, make it sweet. I can't claim to be like Prabhupada or Rupa Goswami, who sweeten it by the touch of their lips, but my bitter poisonous self is becoming sweetened by the transcendental topics. So we are, by this study of these teachings of Rupa Goswami Prabhupada, we are getting the direct association of Srila Rupa Goswami. So we're praying for his blessings, since he is actually present in these discourses coming from his teachings. We're praying to Srila Rupa Goswami that he may bless us with transcendental knowledge and realization, that we may purely and very succinctly and attractively present the essence of his teachings of pure devotional service for the benefit of the speaker and the hearers and the whole universe. As evidence for this, Rupa Goswami quotes from Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, 14th chapter, verse 19. This verse is in connection with Lord Krishna's instruction to Uddhava, where he says, "My dear Uddhava, devotional service unto me is just like a blazing fire, which can burn into ashes unlimited fuel supplied to it." The purport is that as the blazing fire can burn away any amount of fuel to ashes, so devotional service to the Lord in Krishna consciousness can burn up all the fuel of sinful activities. For example, in the Gita, Arjuna thought that fighting was a sinful activity, but Krishna engaged him on the battlefield under his order, and so the fighting became devotional service. Therefore, Arjuna was not subjected to any sinful reaction. So even if what you're doing may appear to be sinful, if you're acting under the order of Guru and Krishna, that activity is pure transcendental activity, and it is not sinful, and it frees you from all sinful reactions. Srila Rupa Goswami quotes another verse from the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 33rd chapter, verse 6, in which Devahuti addresses her son Kapiladeva and says, "My dear Lord, there are 9 different types of devotional service beginning from hearing and chanting. Anyone who hears about your pastimes, who chants about your glories, who offers you obeisances, who thinks of you in this way, executes any of the 9 kinds of devotional service, even if he is born in a family of dog eaters, the lowest grade of mankind, becomes immediately qualified to perform sacrifices." Wow. Even if you're a family of dog eaters. America, we didn't eat dog, but we did eat hot, what we called hot dogs. But even the hot dog eaters, they can become qualified Vaishnavas. Now, there are people out there right now making propaganda on the internet and in lectures saying, unless you're a caste Brahmin, you cannot be a guru. Even we have two former ISKCON devotees who decided to ignore their spiritual master and want to do their own thing, start their own movements. They're preaching only caste Brahmins can be gurus, so ISKCON is off the track. But we see in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, even Muslims were made into gurus. Who is that Muslim who became a guru? That's right. Even Muslim can become acharya. Not only acharya, but namacharya. Namacharya state Haridastakur ki jai. You see? So if Lord Chaitanya didn't know that only caste Brahmins can be gurus. I guess Lord Chaitanya made a mistake, right? Who is the greatest personified, you see. So these are fools and rascals. Simply because they happen to be born in a Brahmin family. You know, so-called. Where is the true Brahmins? In this Kali Yuga, there are no true Brahmins anyway. The Brahma Bandhus. Where are the caste Brahmins? Actual Brahmins. They're not there. Brahman means who has all Brahminical qualities. Shamadamastapachacham chantirarjavam evacha jnanam vijnanamaschikam brahma karma svabhavajam. Actually, there was one Brahman who really went off the track, and since that time, all the Brahmins have been off the track. His name was Sringi. He cursed the king to die, you see. Snake bird. Within 7 days, he would be bitten by snake bird. So, these Brahmins nowadays, they're descendants of Sringi. You see? They are not qualified. But the real qualified Brahmin is described here. The real qualified person. Called by Devahuti, who executes any of the 9 types of devotional service, even if he is a family from dog eaters. Prabhupada continues, as such, how is it possible that anyone actually engaged in devotional service in full Krishna consciousness has not become purified? It is not possible. One who is engaged in Krishna consciousness and devotional service has without doubt become freed from all contamination of material sinful activities. Devotional service, therefore, has the power to actually nullify all kinds of reactions and sinful deeds. A devotee is nevertheless always alert not to commit any sinful activities. This is his specific qualification as a devotee. Thus, Srimad Bhagavatam states that by performing devotional service, a person who was born even in a family of dog eaters may become eligible to take part in the performance of the ritualistic ceremonies recommended in the Vedas. It is implicit in this statement that a person born into a family of dog eaters is generally not fit for performing yajna or sacrifice. The priestly caste in charge of performing these ritualistic ceremonies recommended in the Vedas is called the Brahmana order. Unless one is a Brahmana, he cannot perform these ceremonies. A person born in a Brahmana family or in a family of dog eaters due to his past sinful activities. If a person is born in a family of dog eaters, it means that his past activities were all sinful. But even if such a person takes to the path of devotional service and begins to chant the holy names of the Lord, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, he is at once fit to perform the ritualistic ceremonies. This means that his sinful reactions have immediately become neutralized. Again, Prabhupada uses the word immediate. So whether you're in a family of Brahmins or family, so-called Brahmins, a family of dog-eaters, Kshatriya, whatever you may be, Indian, Westerner, whatever you may be, if you will chant Hare Krishna and follow the orders of Srila Prabhupada, your sinful actions will become neutralized, you become qualified to perform ritualistic ceremonies, and you'll be qualified to become a guru as per Lord Chaitanya's order. So there's some questions now. Wait, was papers passed around? Yeah. You haven't passed them yet? So go ahead and pass the papers around. Oh, here's a question. Okay. Let's see, I had my flashlights on. Okay. Activity qualified by Guru and Krishna. Though ghastly, just like Arjuna was engaged in ghastly warfare, would be called pure devotional service. Sometimes we receive instructions from gurus, representatives, who are not pure devotees. How do you know they're not pure devotees? Only gurus are pure devotees? Anybody who is sincerely following this process, Prabhupada considers them and says they are pure devotees. Yeah, you're not. You're all contaminated. My temple managers are contaminated, right? You know, you have Prabhupada was asked one time on a walk in Golden Gate Park in the early days of ISKCON. One devotee, this is the early days. There's only two temples in ISKCON, New York and San Francisco. His name is Swamiji. Swamiji, how many pure devotees are there on the planet? Prabhupada said, how many devotees are there in ISKCON? So don't be so quick to judge, yeah, my bhakti leader, he's certainly not a pure devotee. I mean, he's only been chanting for 2 or 3 years. So how could he be a pure devotee? Don't be so quick to think they're not pure devotees. That's your impurity, Prabhu. Because you are impure, you're thinking they are impure. So you have to learn to see the purity and the beauty of all these devotees. You see. So sometimes we receive instructions from gurus, representatives who are not pure devotees. What qualifies which activity is pure devotional service? Prabhupada told us, he said, Prabhupada, when you're gone, how will we know how to please you when you're not present? And even when he is here, he wasn't always at our temple. So how do you know when you're pleasing Prabhupada? He said the temple president and the GBC is there. So you have your representatives of guru, you have your representatives of the parampara. They are your GBCs, they are your temple leaders, they are your department heads, etc. So you will work very nicely to follow your department head, your temple managers. This is Prabhupada's instruction. But he told me, do whatever they say. That was a direct order I got from Prabhupada. He told me to do whatever the temple leaders say. So that's following Prabhupada, you see. Prabhupada said, follow your temple leader. So by doing that, you're following Prabhupada. But don't be fanatical about it. You have to be a little intelligent. There was one time in New York. It's a long story. Maybe I should tell the whole story, but. There was a lady who was a con artist, and she, a Japanese woman, she posed herself as the heiress to the Toyota fortune, and the devotees believed her, and the temple president, it was a sannyasi, also thought this was the heiress of the Toyota fortune, and he thought that would it be a great if we can get the Toyota fortune, ISKCON will be. Can take over the world with all that money. So he gave up sannyas and he married her. Can you imagine? She was actually just an ordinary woman. She was a con artist. So now she's the wife of the temple president, and she was having them offer eggs to the deities. Egg rolls, Chinese egg rolls, were being offered to Radha Govinda in New York Temple. And devotees were going along with it because she was, you know, the heiress of the Toyota fortune. She was the wife of the temple president. And she was so exalted in the devotees' minds. During Bhagavatam class, she'd have a female attendant who would fan her with a chamara whisk. The speaker didn't get a chamara whisk, but she would get a chamara while she heard the Bhagavatam class. Some of the interesting histories that ISKCON went through in his younger days. So she was having egg rolls offered to Radha Govinda, and Prabhupada was very... On one hand, he said, do what the temple authorities say. On the other hand, he chastised the devotees for doing what the authorities said. So you have to be a little intelligent. If somebody tells you to go against the instructions of Srila Prabhupada, obviously you don't do that. But you follow your authorities, because if they deviate, then you have to call your GBC. The temple president told me to offer egg rolls to the deities. What's going on here? You know. That's not going to happen here. I know your leaders. You have very good Krishna conscious, pure devotee leaders here. But this is an example. If the leaders did deviate, you go to report to their authority and tell them what's going on here immediately. But so it's not that you blindly follow the authorities. Now we have to really move. We have tons of questions come in. I love it. Your questions are really great here. I love your questions. It's the only reason I like to come back here, twice a year. You were telling that by Krishna consciousness, all sinful actions are burned for the devotee, but he should stop committing sinful activities. But because of our past conditioning of old habits, we are forced to do sinful activities as prohibited. No, you're not. You just have to follow the vows. You know, no illicit sex and no meat eating. You're not forced to do these things. You have to simply take shelter of Guru. And then he will protect you from these past tendencies. If you don't take shelter of Guru, yes, then you will be carried away by sinful activities. Therefore, you must take shelter of the bona fide spiritual master. He will protect you. Atau garashvayam. That is the first step in bhakti. Take shelter of the bona fide spiritual master. Okay, we know that we're doing wrong. We are unable to stop that. It means you haven't taken shelter of Guru. But you say, but I'm initiated and I'm still doing it. That means you still haven't properly taken shelter of your spiritual master. If you're initiated, you're doing nonsense activities, it means you're not really taking shelter of your Guru. You're off on your own mental platform somewhere. So come back to reality, realize you're a fallen soul. Fall down at the feet of your spiritual master. If he's not physically present, then within your heart, fall down at his lotus feet and beg him to help you out of your illusion. Wow. We'll just save him for other classes, I guess. I have some... What does sincerity mean? I like this question. It's a very interesting, it's a very sincere question, by the way. Well, how do I know what sincerity is? Well, were you asking that question sincerely? Did you really want to know the answer? That's sincerity. You see, it's a very simple thing. It's not difficult to be sincere. Sincerity means you're genuine. Yes, I do want to be a devotee. If one is sincere, how long will it take for one to achieve pure devotional service? Well, it depends on how sincere you are. If you're absolutely, totally, completely sincere, immediately you come to the platform of pure bhakti. And if you're kind of, coming out of the fog of tamagun, rajagun, sattvagun, it will take some time. So for most of us, it's coming out of the fog of tamagun, rajagun, sattvagun. It will take some time. But it will happen. And it depends on, you know, what were you doing in your previous life? Where did you leave off from your previous life? Chances are we were executed in a previous life. Now we're continuing. So it really varies, but the point is, it doesn't really matter, because once you're in the process, you're as good as a pure devotee already. Just like there's some devotee, you know, he was out there, he was doing some working in an automobile, you know, doing some auto mechanic work, just like our Jayananda used to do, the grandfather or the father of our Ratha Yatras used to do auto mechanics work. He'd crawl into the car, get his all dirty and greasy under the car. So sometimes a devotee may become very dirty by his service. But he's in the shower. So will you say, oh, he's so dirty. No, if he's in the shower, he's considered clean, even though he's still dirty, because he's cleaning himself off. You never criticize a person for being dirty when they're in the shower. So just by taking sincerely to this process, you're in the shower of devotional service. And even though you're not a pure devotee yet, you're as good as a pure devotee because you're in the shower. So if you stay in this process, chanting your 16 rounds, following the regulated principles, being obedient to your spiritual master, working nicely with the other devotees, then you're considered a pure devotee already. If one is greedy for devotees' association, one feels inspired, even if one may lose his job to attend it. Is it proper? Losing one's job is beyond your control. Giving up your job is another thing. Say, well, I'm just going to quit my job and so I can associate with devotees. There's a nice story in this connection. Our Satsvarupa Maharaj, back in the old days at 26 Second Avenue, the movement was just a few boys and a little tiny storefront. That was the whole International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So at that time, he was working, he had a job as a welfare worker. You go to the office every day, you know, social welfare worker. But all the other boys were there, but the storefront all day was Swamiji, relishing the nectar of Sadhu Sangha. And he's going to a karmi job, associating with all these karmis, thinking, this isn't good. I'm going to quit my job so I can associate with devotees. So he came back on his lunch break, and he said, Swamiji, I quit my job. He was very proudly telling Swamiji, I quit my job, Swamiji. Well, Prabhupada wasn't too pleased because his job was paying for the rent of the temple. So Prabhupada told him a story about a woman who had a secret lover. She had a paramour, a married woman. She had her husband and she had her paramour on the side. So she was serving her husband very, very nicely, so he would never suspect she had a paramour lover. First class service. So Prabhupada, of course, this is not a point that our lady should do this. This is an example. So in this example, you see, the job of the social welfare office is serving is his wife, and Krishna is the paramour lover, you see. You do your job so nicely that they appreciate, oh, he's so dedicated to his job, but actually he doesn't care a bit about his job. He just wants to serve Krishna. So in this way, Prabhupada convinced him to go back and resume his job, which he did, as long as it was necessary. So if your job is required, you have to do it. And that's just an austerity, it's a service to collect Lakshmi, or to get Sita Devi and bring her to Ram. Sita is Lakshmi, that is money, and Krishna or Ram is Lord. So that money actually belongs to the Lord. Sita belongs to Ram. So maybe it's required So if it's required for you to work that job, you do that as an austerity and the mood of Hanuman bringing Sita Devi back to Ram. What's the meaning of being greedy for Krishna consciousness? That means I can't live without Krishna consciousness. I cannot live without it. How to balance one's material duties, job, raising family? Well, you have to dovetail all of them into Krishna bhakti. I've given a nice actually, I have written a whole essay about this. It's published in your book, yes. Look in your grahastha, what's the book called? The grahastha manual you have? You have a manual for grahasthas. Remember that book? I have, kindly get that book and you can read that book. I've written a whole article about that. How you can be a Krishna conscious householder and become a pure devotee, working a job and raising a family. The example of Bhaktivinoda Thakur is there in my essay. He describes one bhajan. He says, now I am working this job to support your household. He doesn't see this is my house, my wife, my kids, my bank balance. Not my, you see that? My. What is it? Maya. He sees that everything is the property of Krishna. I'm working a job to make a nice Krishna-conscious atmosphere in the home so my wife can become a pure devotee, my kids can become a pure devotee, I can become a pure devotee, and I'm showing the example of the whole world that how everyone in the world can become pure devotees. I'm acting as an acharya by this example. I remember when I first joined ISKCON, all the householders lived in the temple. No one had outside jobs when I joined. Practically no one. It was very rare if a householder lived on the outside and had a job. Everybody was living in the ashram. We had one common economy. And the temple treasurer would take care of everyone. The householders would go to the temple treasurer. Everyone would go to the temple treasurer. Everybody was one economy. But I remember when Tamal Krishna Goswami thought this is not very practical for the future of our movement. He said, we should support ISKCON. In other words, you go out and get a job and give a portion of your earnings to support the temple. So that became the new thing. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj spearheaded this new initiative within ISKCON of householders. Initiated devotees going out, having jobs, and supporting the temple by their income and by their example and by their participation. So having a job is no impediment. You simply have to have the right consciousness. You need to take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. You need to get initiated. You need to become obedient to your spiritual master as a brahmachari, a sannyasi, a grihastha, or a vanaprastha. In any order, if you will follow this system, you'll become a pure devotee and you will achieve bhakti, prema bhakti. Klesha Agni is first class, first characteristic of pure devotional service. Destroying all, relief from all distress, okay. Which is manifest at the stage of nishta. So the suffering of new devotee remains till he reaches the stage of nishta, or klesha agni will start from adaushradha. Well, the relief comes immediately and it becomes matured. You become more relieved as you become more mature. It's simple then. If you're 1% Krishna conscious, you're 1% relieved from material distress. 50% Krishna conscious, now you're 50% relieved from material distress. So it's simply up to you how much you are going to take up this process, because that will determine how much you become relieved from distress. Simple thing. Okay, Bhagavad Gita mentions that devotional service begins after liberation. Could you please elaborate what that actually means? When does it actually start? When you become when you take up devotional service, you're already liberated. Simple thing. See, there's different platforms. dharma, dharma, artha, kama, moksha. There are four dimensions. Moksha, liberation, but the fifth dimension, Prabhupada explains in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, the fifth dimension is devotional service. So when you take up devotional service, you're already considered to be a liberated soul because you've sincerely taken up Krishna consciousness. Is it possible to see Lord Krishna before leaving this body?
Yes.
If yes, what is the qualification needed for it? Shuddha bhakti, pure devotional service. Prabhupada ordered me to see. He said, now you just become qualified to see Krishna face to face. So I'm trying, I'm begging Krishna to please qualify me. It's Prabhupada's order. I have to follow my Guru Maharaj's order. He ordered me to become qualified to see Krishna face to face. Therefore, I'm begging Krishna, please. I'm begging Prabhupada, please bless me. I've become absolutely free from all the blockings. Actually, Krishna is already there. He's already present. But we have cataracts of lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, and envy. These are cataracts which disenable us from seeing Krishna. Actually, Krishna is fully present. So we just have to become freed from all of the lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, and envy. And actually, to the degree that you are freed, Krishna gradually becomes revealed, manifest. Okay, is there any difference in consciousness, in conscious and unconscious sinning? Yes. If you're aware that you're sinning, you do it anyway, you get a worse reaction. But either way, sin, if you step on an ant by accident, you didn't even know it, you get a reaction. If you step on the ant on purpose, oh, just see that ant over there, you go, boom. You see, then you get a much worse reaction. So sinning in knowledge gives you a much worse reaction than sinning in ignorance. But either way, you get a reaction. You give an example of breathing and killing microbial germs. For such a sin as a person could get... For such a person, a person could get a life, not a life as a... What? Life as a what? Next life of a... Let's see if you can make up that word. Next life of a... Next life of a...
Person would get a next life of a microbe.
Microbe. It's possible. Sure. Jiva becomes qualified to become a microbe? Microbial germ. What kind of reaction a person gets for performing a sin if he is practicing devotee and due to the past... A devotee is freed. If you're sincerely taking up this process, you accidentally fall down and do some nonsense. Api chat sudaracharo bhajate mamananyaba. Krishna will free you. If you take up devotional service once again, he will relieve you for that reaction. Can you please narrate the incidents in Atlanta Temple when you saw a Prabhupada deity crying during Guru Puja? It was during the noon arti, actually, during the what they call the Panihati festival. Atlanta ISKCON is new Panihati. And they have, you know, all the chip rice festival in Chaitanya Charitamrita. There was a wonderful festival, the chip rice festival. So they have a chip rice, it's wonderful. You ever in Atlanta at that time, go for the chip rice festival. It's really wonderful. Jai Bhattaka Swami always comes. And it's a wonderful festival. So during that one, during the height of the festival, during the noon arti, the deity of Prabhupada sitting on the Vyasasana on the back of the temple, same like deity like you have here, there was a tear coming down his right eye, like this coming down his face. So it was very nice. Then we offered him Guru Puja, Jai Pataka Swami. We called in Jai Pataka Swami, he looked at it, and then he had us do Guru Puja immediately to Prabhupada. It was a wonderful miracle to see how the deity was crying in ecstasy of the Hare Krishna Kirtan. Actually, Prabhupada, I was just hearing yesterday in the Nectar of Devotion series, Prabhupada was saying that Krishna will talk with you. The deity will actually talk to you. You can talk to him, he will talk to you. We have to be qualified that Krishna will actually talk to us. Just like Sakshi Gopal, that example is there. So that is there. We become pure devotees. The deity can actually talk to us. Thank you very much for an enlightening class. As you told, pure devotional service removes all distress immediately. Why we are not able to experience the relief? You are experiencing relief. Don't you see how much relief you're experiencing already? Just take a look at the people out there in Pune right now and compare your position. I mean, you have to just see how much relief you're already getting. It's very good to remember how much you were suffering before. So you think, oh, there's so many austerities of living in the ashram, or so many austerities of being a Krishna conscious householder. But just try to remember how bad it was before and count your blessings. Count your blessings. Sometimes the problems seem to increase. Believe me, you are much better off now than you were in the material world. It's definitely, some people think, you know, it's better to go back to the material world. There's so much austerity being an ISKCON devotee. There's so many problems being, I'm just going to get out of here. No, don't think like that. You have to understand you are in the best position you can be. You're in a better position than being Brahmaji, the chief demigod of the entire material world. Being a brahmachari in the ISKCON temple or being a householder, living a Krishna conscious life, you are better in the position than Brahmaji. A non-devotee Brahmin, obviously, in this case. But please count your blessings and realize you're in the most fortunate position. This is better than winning the lottery. To be a brahmachari in the ashram is better than winning, I don't know how many crores of rupees they give in the lotteries here, but you know, it's better than winning the biggest lottery in the history of India. To be a brahmachari here in the temple. How much a devotee should consult horoscope in marriage, etc.? Well, Prabhupada said, and there's one letter I just read the other day, he said, this is for karmi. Devotee doesn't need. This horoscope is for non-devotee, not for devotee. If the girl is Krishna conscious and the boy is Krishna conscious, bus. I didn't consult a horoscope when I got married. I've never consulted a horoscope or anything. I sometimes call them horoscopes. The thing is, Prabhupada said that just by, your palm tells your future, right? But he said, one time clapping the palm in kirtan, your whole future is changed. So I'm not, whatever my horoscope is, I'm not dependent on it. I may be fated to die tomorrow, okay, by my horoscope. But by engaging in devotional service, I can live for 500 years, if that's what Krishna wants. You see? Horoscope means that the influence of the demigods, because they're the predominating deities of the stars. The demigods are acting under the influence of the three modes of material nature. So astrology means according to the influence of the three modes of nature. That's what it really means. So when you come to devotional service, now you're transcending the influence of the three modes of material nature. So that means the astrological laws, which are indeed laws, don't act on you to the extent that you've surrendered to Krishna. They're no longer active. So they don't apply to you. That's why it's not needed for devotees. Devotional service is powerful, so why, after practicing 5 or 6 years, sinful reactions are not going? They are going away. In 5 or 6 years, you're just hardly getting started. I've been doing this for 44 years. What is your 5 or 6? You're just new kid on the block. You mentioned that one should become greedy for pure devotional service. As one is greedy for money, sex, etc., at the present moment we are naturally attracted to sense gratification, hence we are greedy for, and how we can cultivate such greed for bhakti. Gulab jamuns. That's one way. Actually, mostly I don't see them make the gulab jamuns even properly, but the way they used to make, there's a recipe from Prabhupada, the ISKCON standard of gulab jamun. When you bite into that thing, it's like explosive. This juice comes. So gulab jamuns is one way. A properly made gulab jamun is one way. The ISKCON standard gulab jamun, not the Indian standard gulab jamun. The ISKCON standard gulab jamun. The Indian, I eat the Indian standard gulab jamuns. They're a disappointment. Not a gulab jamun. That's a gulab bloop. You eat an Indian, you eat a real ISKCON bullet, you're gonna go bah. Okay, there are many bona fide spiritual masters in ISKCON. How do I know who is my guru? Ask Krishna. Krishna, I am fully surrendered to you. Please guide me. Who is my spiritual master? I know he's already there. I'm already his disciple. It's just time is awaiting. But will you please bless me? Understand who is my spiritual master? And Krishna revealed to you. No problem. Hare Krishna Prabhuji, as we were to anyway suffer our sinful reactions, why to take medicine? Thing is, in Krishna's service, we want to serve the best we possibly can. So if you're sick and taking medicine will help you get better, then you do it. Actually, it was your sinful reaction to get sick, but it was your pious reaction to have a good doctor who will give you a good medicine. That's also your karma in another sense. Or Krishna's mercy in a higher sense. So we take whatever is favorable for our Krishna consciousness. That's a very simple principle. Whatever is favorable for Krishna consciousness, I accept. Whatever is not favorable, I do not accept. So if medicine will help my service, I will take. If it's not going to help, don't bother. Krishna says, Desham tvaga kam papam. So it is. Is it that only a sinless person who comes to Krishna, to ISKCON, doesn't suffer ill health? Everybody suffers ill health sooner or later. Whether you're pious or you're sinful, every one of us will eventually suffer ill health. But you have a material body. Material bodies go through birth, death, old age, and disease. I'm seeing, especially now, the Prabhupada disciples, we're all in our 60s now, and some in the 70s, you see. I see so many God brothers and God sisters, and health problems are there. You see, it comes. It's unavoidable. You are going to have health problems sooner or later. So you have to situate yourself transcendentally now. So it will be you, Krishna consciousness, will not only be not affected by by ill health, which will come eventually to this aging body, but actually, if you're in the proper mood, You will get energized by ill health. Your realization will become further energized by ill health. That's a proper Krishna consciousness devotee. He sees everything as the loving mercy of Krishna. Whether it's loss or gain, everything enhances his Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada gives the example of a businessman. When the prices go up, he sells. When the prices go down, he buys. So whether the market is an up market or a down market, his business is expanding. So whether you have some great, wonderful thing, it's like right now I just got a horrible cramp in my leg. So just, you use it, whatever comes, you see it as Krishna's mercy to help you to understand you're not the body and your only business is to serve Krishna in all circumstances. So in this way, you use every situation for your advantage, like a businessman who's always expanding his business in every circumstance. In this way, sickness will be, everything will be your friend. Sickness, old age, and death, they will be your friend. To help you attain Goloka Dham. But even higher still, to help you enter into the mood of pure devotional service. A pure devotee doesn't think, I have to get out of this material world. A pure devotee is willing to serve in any condition. His mood is Krishna, I am your servant, you can do whatever you want to with me. If you want me to remain here forever in the cycle of birth and death to spread your movement here in this world, I'm willing, whatever you want me to do. Not that I will be your devotee if you will take me back to Goloka. No, a devotee is completely transcendental. He will serve Krishna in every situation, and because of his transcendental consciousness, he is already liberated. He's already living in Goloka Vrindavan because of that transcendental consciousness which he has embraced tightly as his very being. Do you understand? Okay. Is it true that one who is initiated a devotee, ISKCON, will not suffer the simple reactions of his past? They will. You will get a token reaction to help you be remember this material world is a place of misery. You're not going to get the full reaction. Anybody who gets initiated, your spiritual master is actually taking the burden of your reactions. And so be kind on your guru. Once you get initiated, do not engage in any more sin because your spiritual master will suffer reactions for your sins. If you're initiated, you go out and break the principles, your Guru Maharaj will take reactions in his body. Don't do that. Don't punish your spiritual master. When you take initiation, you must be very serious to follow your initiation vows. Otherwise, you're going to hurt your spiritual master. Prabhupada said the spiritual, he wrote Jayapataka Swami a letter. He said, the spiritual master has to take birth after birth until all his disciples go back to Godhead. So don't force your Guru Maharaj to take birth again in the material world to save you in a future life. You go back to Godhead in this lifetime. Be kind on your guru. He's been kind upon you. Now you be kind upon him. Our time is up. 10 o'clock. So we have all these questions. They're going to roll over to the next session, which will be tonight at 7:30 p.m. till 9. Pure devotional service for auspiciousness and transcendental pleasure. So we hope you all can come. Bring your friends. Bring your neighbors. Bring the Prime Minister if he's available. And let's go deeper and deeper into this wonderful ocean called pure devotional service. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.